ladder up. Here we are. We are live. Hello, Facebook. Hello, all of our A Pod of Their Own listeners. Welcome to episode number 109 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Maggie.
We are also joined by two very special guests this week. Other than when we had the lovely folks from IWBC on, I believe this is the first time ever that we've had multiple guests at once. And it's definitely the first time that we've had two guests together who have each been on the show separately from each other, each multiple times, in fact. So this is a very exciting episode for us. Two friends of the pod here together talk about a very important baseball story that they collaborated on. Dr. Meredith Wills is here. She is an astrophysicist and baseball deconstructor extraordinaire, so to speak. She has been collecting and taking apart baseballs for many years now, and generated the data that Bradford reports in his Business Insider story. Bradford William Davis is also here. He is an investigative journalist with Business Insider and a podcaster at Baseball Prospectus. He reported on the data that Dr. Wills generated for the Business Insider article that we're going to talk about. And he also spoke with Major League Baseball players, coaches, and executives for this incredible story that we're going to talk about. So welcome back to the pod, both of you. We're very excited to have you on today.
Thanks.
Yo, it's a pleasure to be back.
Awesome. So we'll start things off with you, Meredith. We had on the show back in May of 2021, if you remember, and already then we knew something was up with the baseballs. A little bit. But
I didn't know how much was up then, frankly.
We knew it was something and that they were different from the 2020 balls in some way. And obviously you've been very busy since then. Obviously the TLDR here is that it's right there in the title of Bradford's piece that MLB used two different baseballs in 2021. But it isn't just that there were two different balls, it's that there were two different balls produced during two distinct time periods. So can you elaborate on the process of gathering your data that was in this story? And can you talk a little bit with our listeners about like reaching the conclusions that you did and whether and like how surprised were you by them?
Well, I have a feeling it was May that we talked.
Yeah, that, May 2021, I think.
What I had probably found was when MLB told Stephanie Apstein for the article on the 2020 ball, we're only going to be using this new kind of baseball in 2021. I suspect I had already found that wasn't the case, that they were also using the old, specs for the baseball. But so should I go straight to show and tell?
Yeah.
So, this is a baseball. This is another baseball. There are a lot of them around here, but I'm not going to, this is fine. So on the inside of every baseball, every major league baseball, I should say, that's made in Costa Rica, there is something called a batch code. And that's actually a number. It translates using a code that's called the Black Horse code. So you just take the word Black Horse and each letter corresponds to a number. B is one, L is two, all the way to E is zero. So if we look at this, ESLELOR, so that turns out to be 092078. Yes, I can convert in my head. So the 0920 is that it's September 2020. So this ball was, it's part of 2021 production, was made September 2020. This ball is the kind of specifications on the inside, I should say. Like, this is the part that we've been talking about. The weight of this is basically the same as pretty much every ball I've looked at going back to like 2000. And when we've talked about baseballs before, this has been the standard. So this is not the ball that MLB said it was going to use. This is the old kind of ball. They said it was only going to be the new kind. So, Exhibit B, or Exhibit L, I suppose, if we're going for, that was Exhibit B. This is Exhibit L. The next will be Exhibit A. Tell me you've got the joke, right? Okay.
I got it.
Thank you. All right. So this one, good.
I'm writing everyone's wheels are turning. We're all catching up.
I'm just writing it down. Awesome. I'm writing it all down.
Now we know who took cryptography there will be a quiz. In college.
I actually promised someone there wouldn't be a quiz, but there may be a quiz. We'll find out.
Yes. I don't have my decoder ring on, so I'm
yeah, that's awesome. I want a decoder ring. I totally want a decoder ring with a black horse code.
I feel like Etsy is going to take care of you on that place to do this.
Yes.
Opening my calculator app and...
Yeah, this is a count ring, though. This isn't like a proper decoder ring. I probably could talk to these people to do a decoder. That'd be awesome. So, so next one, EBLBLSE. So that is 01-21-290. And so what that means is that it is January 2021. And in January 2021, these balls were actually the new kind of spec. Not the same as the new kind of spec balls that they made in 20. I mean, they're the same kind, but it's a different set. So
a new.
So like this is 2021 new as opposed to 2020 new, whatever. So we've already had the old part one, then new. These are still 2021s. Now you guys can do this. Here's my pop quiz. This is part three because, you need three acts. Is that how stories are supposed to go, right? So who wants to decode that?
E, so that's zero. Oh, like, oh.
So wait, I want to ask a question before we start. Is Black Horse from 1 to 9 and then zero?
Yes,
E is okay. Zero. So give me 1 second.
Oh, this awesome. Yes, I'm writing this down.
All right. Way to go, Kellyanne.
Because I'm Kellyanne a nerd like that. Is it
July 21?
So it's EOLBABO?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm under pressure here.
That's all
under
right.
Pressure.
Okay. So I have 0721317.
So yes! You're right, July 21, and the 217, or excuse me, 317 is the what's called a production week. And you notice those last three digits have been going up too, because those correspond to roughly a week of production. You know, it's give and take because of the way, particularly because of some of the changes with they had layoffs, they brought people back. But so this is July 2021. Which is pretty recent. And in fact, the latest balls I found were from August of 2021. This one is back to the old baseball version. So that's all 2021 production. Yeah. So we had like the old one and then the new one and then the old one. And if you read the SI article, that was the old one, then the new one, then the old one, except that was 2020. And I have other balls that were used for 2021 that are back over there, which I'm not going to. Three is plenty, but what we have is balls that were used in 2021, but they're exactly the same, except that they're from 2020 instead of from 2021. So this is what I've been doing for most of this year, but clearly this is weird. This is not how it's supposed to go. And particularly the middle one there, the center was much lighter than anything we've seen before. 2020. So
that was the January one, right?
Yeah, the January one was the lighter one. And there was a similar period in the middle of 2020 production, which was actually, I think, was September 2019 through January of 2020, where it was also lighter, was this new ball. And that's the one that MLB said, yeah, this is the ball that's going to be used in 2021. And, you know, the way that everything sounded was like, yeah, this is the only kind of ball that's going to be used in 2021. Not only did they not use them, they didn't even just make them. They made all three, or they made both kinds in that same weird back and forth and back thing. So those are the data. And I had a lot of data for like four times as much as the next study kind of deal for the data for this season. And that's just regular season.
I don't even want to imagine what it's like in the playoff season when chaos reigns to begin with.
Actually, playoffs is tough because it's just hard to get baseballs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very hard to get baseballs.
I wonder why.
It's always been hard. No, it's just.
Yeah, no.
Because you need them from on the field. So, yeah. And you need ones for sure that are postseason. So you know that they're postseason.
But if you have them.
Wow, oh yeah, no, please. If anybody's got them,
send them.
No.
Oh my god, that'd be huge. Yes.
As we have said every time Meredith has been on the show, please send Meredith your balls.
Uh-huh.
But on.
I'm so
impressed. Oh yeah, I've never heard that joke. Italian, how did you all sing this time around? You can just imagine, right?
No, I've heard that joke. I just am just a child. I'm not even
have we ever not named the episode something ball related? I mean,
I don't think so.
Five. It's right there.
I mean, I got more balls than any man I know.
Facts.
Sorry, it's really easy to get me to crack up. Just FYI.
Oh, it gets worse.
So Meredith, you were like digging up all this data and starting to, you know, I mean, dig into it like literally in many cases, but so Bradford, can you talk about how you came to be aware of the data and kind of the process of working with Meredith to report it? I imagine you knew this was going to be a pretty big story.
Yeah, you know, I knew it was important. I'm never entirely sure of what the reception will be. And so I'd say I kind of like thought as I was reporting and writing this. I'm really grateful that I have an outlet that, you know, an insider that gave me a lot of time to just kind of like think about this and chip away and travel a decent bit to embed myself with players who ended up speaking to me about this. I was in Boston a lot for the playoffs, not discussing playoff stuff at all, but like discussing various conspiracies and just, you know, seeing if the players look at me like I have a tinfoil cap on or two heads or, you know, yeah, right. So it's like, you know, I'm grateful for, you know, shout out to John Cook, my editor, who like, you know, is admittedly not a sports fan, but just kind of like trusted that I was onto something. And, I became aware of this data, frankly, just through my strong relationship with Meredith, Dr. Wills. I reached out back in like late 2019, let's say, just to hear her take on all this ball stuff as it was, you know, as it just continued to become a storyline. I end up writing, you know, a piece I'm pretty proud of back in 2020 about her Sabre award-winning research, that she just, you know, that debuted, I guess, maybe a month or so before, you know, or not, I shouldn't say debuted rather, but rather she did another presentation, building on top of that, earlier that year at the Sabre Analytics Conference, which was like a COVID stricken conference. It was really, you know, weird time, but you know, as I'm looking for stuff to write about, cause there's no baseball, like, you know, let's talk about baseball, literally. And, you know, and I was aware of what she was working on with Sports Illustrated, you know, because I knew she was actually looking for a place to publish the research. And so I connected her with staff who I, you know, really admire and trust. And I just told her, hey, Meredith, if there's ever a time you want to work with me, like on more things, please let me know. And so she absolutely did. there are very few people in the last, let's say 21 months that I've spoken to more than Meredith, like very few, like, you know,
Bradford is literally like, you know, those pinned things that you have in your texts. I've only got like three of them and Bradford's one and my dad's right next to him.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
Sorry, just, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it's funny as well you respond to my text so quickly.
Well, I don't have anyone else to talk to.
So since like quarantine, let's say, right, you know, we've just been talking a lot about this stuff and started talking even more as she, you know, more intentionally, I should say, as she began, you know, building on top of the whole, you know, two baseball hypothesis and collecting the data and just kept on finding distinctly different weights in the two balls, in the baseballs. And identified not just as she just presented, you know, not just by the weights, but by the batch codes, showing that it could not be random chance happening, but that it was a systematic and intentional sort of creation of two different baseballs designed to perform in two different ways. And so, when I had the data in hand, like I just started making a point of going to games as frequently as I could to talk to people. I'm very fortunate that like I can, I live in New York. So I have like, there's basically always a team playing, you know, either the Yankees and Mets. So I just, walk on over to Yankee Stadium or City Field and using the more limited, another thing that was actually very important for this is that back in 2020, there was, no media access outside of the Zoom. But during the 2021 season, they eventually opened it up to vaccinated people as long as you're outside, in the in either dugout or field while they were warming up, for the game ahead of them. And so I was able to just kind of like grab people and just be like, hey, this is something I'm working on. This is what I'm doing now. As some of you may know, I used to be a columnist for New York Daily News. I'm not anymore. I do know these long tail investigative projects and everything. And so I was letting the players know, like, I'm reintroducing myself. Like, I don't have to like spin 600 words about like a platoon advantage or something anymore. I don't have to, bang you for, striking out with runners in second and third. Like this, that's not my job right now. Like, it's this. And so just kind of reacclimating, building trust. I hope to just make the game better through, do writing this way about things I'm seeing and things I'm hearing. And so here's something I'm hearing. And so just kind of like walking through that. Eventually Meredith had started supplying me with data visualizations that she was drawing up to quickly explain some concepts, and people were resonated very quickly. I think that's one of the most important things to understand is that players were not surprised. Like if I could use like two words to describe, like to summarize every single response I got, was not surprised. Like, and so
I thought you were gonna say Pete Alonso.
Oh, right.
We'll get there. Well,
we should. Yeah. We should talk about Pete. But given this podcast, I reached out to a lot of folks. Home team and visiting folks, and then players I already had a relationship with, and just kind of like kind of showing the data and asking, hey, if you know anything, if you see anything, like please let me know. And if you want to be part of this, let me know as well. And so a lot of people were very motivated to speak, as you saw, like DJ LeMahieu, for those who aren't familiar with DJ LeMahieu, sort of at least the personality he, presents himself as to the public. He's very reserved. He's very, the Yankee second baseman is like, they call him Le Machine, in part because I think LeMahieu like literally translates to like the machine. But also because he's just very robotic in his replies. And so like, I was actually not expecting him to want to talk, but but even though he's not a talker, he like, we linked up during the off season to like chat on the phone about baseball stuff. So like, that was a strong sign that like, if like a guy like him wants to like be on the record about this, like how much more like, will this resonate once it's out there, And so, that is more or less the process. And I just started, writing the dang thing, editing, checking the mirror to make sure that I was representing the science correctly, making sure that everything was conveyed in a way that was both accurate, but also like easy to understand for people who are not deeply vested in the subject going into it, that's how the story came to be.
People who don't take out their protractors and like roll baseballs down ramps.
Right.
Like...
Exactly. Yeah. That's part of my job.
Never done that. I have slid covers down ramps, but I have never rolled a baseball on anything. That's not the best way to grab data. Sorry.
Depends on the data, I guess. What if you know how fast it rolls down a ramp?
That would kind of be actually, yeah. I was thinking about, because people, occasionally people be like, rolling out or whatever, that'll be like the pun intended. And it did occur to me that there is one ball, the 2019, actually it's Chris Townsend with A's Cast pointed this out, and he's absolutely right, which is if you have a set of balls and like there are a couple 2019s, the easiest way to tell is those are the ones that immediately roll off the table because the seams are so flat, they're just gone.
Yeah.
Everything else will eventually like stop rolling away, not the 2019s. Gone. Off the table, doesn't matter if it's not totally level. And yeah, so it's like, if you're going to lose it, it's probably 2019. But that's the closest I know to a roll test.
And actually, that's a nice segue to my next question. So can you talk a little bit more about the actual impacts this variance in the weight of the center of the ball has on performance? Bradford mentions Joey Votto's home run streak in the article as one example of this playing out very obviously on the field. And the article also goes into detail about how performance issues have come into play in other sports, such as Deflategate in the NFL. Oh, I remember that one well. One player even went so far as to weigh some baseballs himself to replicate your findings. So how does this variation in the actual equipment being used impact the integrity of the game? That's a long question.
That's all right.
Do you need me to repeat any of it? Let me know.
No, it's okay. I'll try to keep the answer shorter than the question, but that's going to be tough because the short answer is for the new ball, it's not really well known. What MLB said the performance was going to be is not really what happened. I mean, in fact, it's almost exactly what didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So the whole point of that lighter center, the balls aren't necessarily smaller. They're lighter. And the reason that's the case is because the very inner layer, I know what I should have grabbed. I have these great cross-section balls. They're across the room or in the other room. But if the very center layer, they wound more loosely for the new ball. So it's less dense. And by virtue of it being less dense, it means that when it hits the bat, it basically squishes a bit more. So it doesn't come off the bat as fast. The analogy I keep using is think of a basketball, then slightly underinflate the basketball. It's not going to bounce as high when it's underinflated. So it becomes the equivalent of that.
Right.
The problem is that when they tested that, they only did it in a lab. And like The Athletic even asked about this. And they said, we only tested it in the lab. And they didn't actually test it in game or real world conditions. So as a result, whose hair frizzes in the summertime?
Okay. I was going to say, somebody's
Mine just goes flat.
Mine frizzes all the time.
There you go.
I'm actually having trouble with it during this live stream.
So your hair, it gets frizzier when it's more humid, right? Hair tends to respond to humidity, it gets frizzier. Yep. So wool is pretty much the same way. And inside, under those conditions, very likely have been a more humid environment. Once you get outside in the summertime, most places the humidity is going to be lower. And it turns out when you lower the humidity, the wool defrizzes, as it were. And then suddenly that bit that's like been able to stay less dense because it's frizzier is no longer frizzy enough and it squishes down.
Mm.
And so then your less dense thing that doesn't bounce as hard is suddenly back to the same. It's a little bit like making the basketball suddenly smaller enough so that the air now fits the same. And so now what you have is you have a ball that's coming off the bat just as hard, except on top of that, because it didn't weigh as much to begin with, it's easier to hit hard. So instead of lowering the exit velocity, it looks like it went up. Now, on top of that, though, they never tested drag at all. So drag also looks like it went up, which means depending on how fast it comes off, it should actually slow down in the air more quickly. But by virtue of coming off the bat so fast, it doesn't seem to matter. You know, we got almost as many home runs, very close to as many home runs as in 2017, which was still an outrageously large amount. It's just 2019 was off the charts. But that being said, you know, by the time you talk about the humidity and it's going to vary park to park. It's going to vary based on the time of year, parks that have humidors versus parks that don't have humidors. So, you know, that's kind of the deal. But to say we know exactly how the new ball performs, it seems much more prone to inconsistency than the old one, which also, it should be pointed out that the goal of the new ball in their statement was to make a more consistent baseball. So just almost every single thing in that statement was like, just all of it. Not good.
Alas.
Only they had professionals at MLB who were familiar with baseballs and how they work.
Well, actually, the people who are familiar with baseballs don't, they've worked for Rawlings historically as opposed to for MLB. Now, MLB's only owned Rawlings for a few years. So, you know, that's actually something that needs to be considered. Is if you have people who work for MLB who are making decisions about baseballs, maybe they should rethink that.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast from New York Magazine. Our first season is about a secretive underground that's about to go mainstream. Psychedelic therapy. Silicon Valley loves it, big name universities and scientists love it, but almost no one is looking that closely at what's really about to go down.
Lily, I know you left the psychedelic world, and I would love for you to talk about the moment where it went from being something safe to something treacherous and bad.
Oh boy, have you buckled your seatbelt? The was dark.
Cover Story, Season 1, Power Trip. Because it's not the drugs that are the problem, it's the people high on power. Check out Cover Story on Spotify or wherever you listen.
So going back to the reception on the part of players and coaches, Bradford, we alluded to this a little bit, but there are a ton of great quotes in this piece from players who clearly notice the difference in the baseballs, like we've been saying, and coaches and executives as well. And the general theme, in addition to not surprised, which I think is, yeah, the best summation of it, is it ranges on the most positive end, you could put it, is probably like neutral, as in like, well, we just go out and play and the baseballs are what they are, to being varying levels of displeased with the league about this. So can you just like talk a little bit more about, in a general sense, about how baseball folks are reacting, both like the reactions that you got for the piece, but since the piece has come out, have there been like additional reactions from not just baseball media, obviously is like a separate thing, but like other players and coaches and executives and things like that? Like, how is the baseball world sort of reacting to this?
Well, interesting thing is that you probably mentioned baseball media, but like the only baseball media that's really picked up on it for the most part is like independent baseball media, like, you know, like fan based stuff, ESPN, The Athletic, you know, the sizable Times and WAPO sports sections. I don't know, you name it, basically, they have not covered it. Times of London, or Times of England covered it. The Times of New York has not.
With a picture of Meredith's face on the front of it.
So we're international, but Prophet has no honor in his own home. As far as player reaction, I'm like, you know, we're actually making a running count of like who has interacted, at least in social media on some level, you know, with this stuff, like current and former. And like, it's about, you know, and then like when you combine with the folks who spoke to me for the article, it's like a couple dozen strong at this point, you know. To make a quick Mets tie, Trevor May pointed out publicly on social media that, like, you know,
we'll be on Amazing Avenue, the show this week, so tune into that.
By the way, yeah,
that's cool. Awesome. Oh, good. Nice. Good.
Yeah, Brian and Chris are going to interview Trevor May this week, so check that out, you guys. It's coming. Yes.
Very nice. But you know, Marcus Stroman reacted to some commentary on that, as he reacts to everything.
I was going to say, Marcus Stroman, a reaction? No,
not on Twitter. Never.
Yeah. Marcus Stroman.
Twitter.com.
Marcus Stroman posting? Never.
I get it.
You know, just off the dome, like, you know, so some of the folks who have, you know, Mitch Garver of the Minnesota Twins, Chris Bassett wondered aloud if the ball that hit his face was kind of like morbidly joking. Was it juiced or not? Like, I don't know.
Actually, if that ball, if somebody has that ball, I can probably find out without taking it apart. So
Meredith, would you rather be hit in the face with the squishy ball or the other one? I mean, I'm not saying like you personally, but like medically speaking, which is the preferred ball?
Medically speaking, where was he? He was hit in Oakland, right? It was at home, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, no, then you definitely want the old ball. Okay. It's too dry there. Yeah, I've been there. It's actually drier in summer.
I want to know.
Someone asked Kevin Pillar this question too.
Right.
Get Kevin Pillar's take.
All right. Yeah. Speaking of more Mets. I was talking to a few people, you know, who were present, like over at the, during the sort of the last hours of negotiating, over in the Dallas, like Fort Worth area, which is where, you know, MLB and the players union were, you know, were talking. And so, like, you know, some of those guys, include dudes like Andrew Miller, who's in the piece, you know, and a very prominent union guy, Sean Doolittle, again, in the piece, you know, prominent union backer. And they were like saying that, like, as this kind of like spread around, like that people were quite animated, you know, in their feelings about, you know, what was happening with this, with baseballs, plural. I think everyone's is at some level of like confused and flummoxed to angered and radicalized. And but no one is truly surprised. That's been the resounding reply to whenever I hear people talk about this information.
So we'll dip a toe into radicalize just for one second and talk about Pete Alonso, since this is a Mets podcast. Also, it's Pete Alonso's birthday, so happy birthday to Pete.
That's true. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, yes. Pete. Yeah. Oh, man, I should have worn my Pete shirt today.
Yeah, I was going to say, Pete, so for your birthday, we found out that you, like, you were onto something. So, you know. There you go. Happy birthday.
Exactly. So at the time, so Pete Alonso, so this is for folks who didn't know about this or don't remember, this was shortly after we had Meredith on the podcast last time. So we had Meredith on the podcast in like May of 2021. And then Pete Alonso said this, I think it was like June or July, it was during the summer. Pete Alonso said, basically insinuated that MLB itself is manipulating the ball based on free agent class. And a lot at the time, like, you know, a lot of people rolled their eyes at this, and obviously based on the data that's in the piece and the data that Meredith has and data that we have, we can't prove or disprove MLB like putting its thumb on the scale or not, or doing anything on purpose. But there is a lot of varying conspiracy theories out there. Like Bradford elaborated in the piece that like one player speculated that, oh, maybe they're giving all the juiced baseballs to the marquee matchups, like the Yankees and Red Sox and stuff like that. And then Pete Alonso last summer said, like, oh, they're manipulating the ball based on free agent class. And at the time, everyone was kind of like, whoa, Tiger, like, chill out. And now it kind of like, it doesn't prove or disprove anything, but it just makes him seem a little less insane, I guess, is the way you could put it. So that's, I don't exactly know if you guys have thoughts about that, or like, is Pete Alonso vindicated? Like, what's
that? I don't think Pete Alonso is correct in the specifics, but I don't think, you know, but I don't think that, I think that this article proves that he's not like, he's not tripping. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
Which was like the initial sort of, you know, sentiment. And it was like, oh, Pete's bugging, you know, this like big man child, you know, all he knows how to do is hit baseballs and that's nothing else. But like, I think it's important to remember that even though players are definitely conspiracy theorists, like a lot of them, you know, like they're very superstitious and stuff like that, they are truly the experts on this because they use the baseball, you know, far more than any of us here, even Meredith, like, you know, use it. Like they, you know, they are intimately familiar with what, you know, should go out the park and what should fly, you know, what should follow the warning track. They know this stuff. And they have been the ones sounding the alarm that the balls are different, you know?
Actually, one thing though, there is the balls are different thing, but on top of that, because I've gotten any number of people with the feedback of, oh yeah, the pitch, you know, what do you mean the pitchers? Of course the pitchers could tell them apart. It's like, well, actually, no, that's the point. The pitchers couldn't tell them apart. With the covers on, If you're just holding the ball, because remember I said about the size thing, that they're pretty much the same size. You know, the weights are, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, when they say within spec, all these balls are quote within spec. None of them violate the official rules that are literally, you know, rule 3.01. And anybody who's played baseball for any amount of time, they feel like normal baseballs. I mean, I think I grabbed two, and I think one is the old ball and one is the new ball. But like now that I've got them over here, I can't tell which is which. Right. And I didn't talk to a single player who would have said, oh yeah, you know, when I pick these up, I can tell this one is this and this one's that. You know, 2019, but
that's,
you could
that's
tell.
From the seams, right? But
the, oh, yeah.
But to clarify what
only
I was
for
saying,
2019,
though,
sorry.
To clarify what I was saying, it's not, it, I'm not discussing feel per se, though that was true at one point about feel, but about like but about performance,
right?
You know, and like, you know, and what happens off the crack of the bat, like, you know, oh, that sounds like a no doubt, you know, extra, you know, extra base hitter or home run, or whatever, and then that one seems like a lazy fly ball.
Wait, I think it's Verlander right? It's Verlander that's quoted in the piece that's like, I know what a home run looks like, and all of a sudden, like, I turn around and I'm like, there's no way.
I think he said, I know what it sounds like. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, I only say that not to correct, but just to show like how intimately they like, you know, and intuitively they understand this stuff, you know? And so, so back to like, you know, to Pete and everything and some of the theories being floated, like, again, I don't think that major personally, right. But though I have no evidence which to prove or disprove it. But I know, I don't think that Major League Baseball, you know, use a deader ball to suppress an offense, you know, a offense heavy free agency class, you know, or you're using a rocket ball to hurt a pitching heavy free agency class, something like that. I don't think they're doing that, but the joy and intrigue, I think, of the research and the study is that, who knows? Maybe they might one day. Like they have the ability. They clearly have the legal ability, and they have the lack of scruples with which to, like, you know, to create multiple baseballs that they intend to perform different ways and do perform different ways. Like, what, you know, why not, you know, try and, you know, and deaden the ball, you know, for, you know, I don't know, Carlos Correa's, like, you know, team or something like that. You know, when he's about to hit free agency, just hypothetically, like. I mean, there's a million reasons why not, but again, this story is dumb. It's stupid. It's crazy. You know, like, you know, and so what's to say things can't get nuttier, you know, depending on what more information comes out from this. So, and I'll close on this question with this, that, Derek Alvin, who is a contributor to Baseball Prospectus, writer, you know, and a friend of mine, but also, you know, he blogs at the views from 314 Yankees blog. He used StatCast data to try and assess whether or not the Yankees were impacted by the whole two-ball setup. And what he found was that when controlling for quality of contact, the Yankees got much, you know, well-hit balls essentially were you know, traveled farther on the road than at home, leading him to speculate that perhaps the Yankees received a disproportionate amount of whichever ball was deader. That was a pretty interesting, again, just one data point, you know, one more, like, you know, push pin on the giant conspiracy wall from, like, you know, Charlie, if it's all of a sudden in Philadelphia,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
one more news clipping, you know, where yeah, right, exactly. I'm glad this is a visual podcast, yeah, so people who are watching can see our hand gestures, you know. But, you know, but one more way to look like John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, but but, like, you know, I find it intriguing, you know, and I think, frankly, I think a lot of people, a lot of team bloggers and writers, like, you know, or sure, beat writers and columnists, if you want to, it's all public information. You should try and run a similar study and see if you see any discrepancy in the team you cover. Maybe there isn't, but I think it'd be interesting to find out.
Well, there's also, and I mean, it certainly comes up in the article, but one of the things that's a real problem is, you know, MLB uses, you know, historically, it's been like 900,000 balls in a season. So, you know, I had 169 that got published there. I can't disprove that. There's, you know, by the time, you know, what you've got 2,430 games in a season, you know, 169 isn't even like 10% of that per game. Like I have less than one ball per game. So even though, you know, I hit got stuff from like half the parks in Major League Baseball, you know, no, I'm not going to have anything that's like that representative, not to mention over 6 months. Yeah, you know, there's no way. Like we basically have, Rawlings has to be able to tell us. And as of the winter of 2019, they made it clear that, yeah, they were going to be tracking baseballs all the way to where they ended up. So they have like promised that they know where those balls are going. You know, they need to come clean on this one way or another, because it's just, the only way it's going to stop the conspiracy theories, frankly, is for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, I mean, if you guys remember my previous work, like, I'm not sure if MLB realizes that I have basically come down on the non-conspiracy theory side for, like, pretty much everything before they started doing the two baseballs. You know, I had a good reason for the 2017 home run search. I had a good reason for the 2019 home run search. I even had a good reason for that stupid 2019 using two baseballs in the postseason. None of them were ideal, but they were all explicable. This is not explicable. I got nothing. Well,
and so this is actually like, this is just what I wanted to get into next, which is that MLB said that, you know, yes, all this data is true, but that, you know, they were going to be using the new baseball design, but then because of the pandemic, they didn't have enough of the new baseballs. So that's why they ended up using the older ones. So why do we, can you explain to our lovely viewers why that just doesn't hold together?
Well, first of all, it's probably the most relatable the commissioner's office has been ever, like blaming the pandemic on, you know, not doing something. I guess that's what I do. Like, I go hang out. Oh, sorry, man. It's, you know,
COVID can't.
The Omicron Zeta side, you know, like, I, who knows, you know, when I just kind of don't want to hang out.
I've gone through the entire Greek alphabet worth of reasons why we can't hang out.
I have a rapid test that day, so.
Yeah.
I was exposed. I can't be around you. I'm in quarantine. Sorry.
Yeah. My rapid test, the results went in spam. I can't find, I don't know. I just don't know. It's inconclusive, you know? So anyway, no. All I'll say is props to Rob Manfred for being relatable.
One time in his life.
For once.
But yo, as far as the COVID-19 pandemic stuff, I think this is like half my speculation, but half some informed reason for this, right? I happen to believe, or Roger, I should say, it doesn't square up with some of the, particularly with the baseballs that Meredith found produced using the old style that they strongly indicated they were moving away from before the season began. And then, you know, seemed to indicate even in a statement to me that they were, you know, that they wanted to use, but just couldn't because of COVID. They were still making that old design as recently as August of 2021. That's well into the pandemic.
The black horse.
For all we know, Omicron might have been around in August. You know, like, so, like, I mean, that's, you know, that immediately, if I had to give a simple explanation as to why I don't believe that you know, passes muster, like, it's that they produced the old baseball as recently as August of this year. So, you know, however, 3 months before, they sent that statement to me, basically, you know.
Well, not only that, they didn't just produce it. They used balls that were made after that statement.
Yes, and used.
They showed up in season.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, these are some of the latest I've seen, quite honestly, for in season. It was kind of surprising.
So on that, just there alone, like, it's just like, okay, that does not sufficiently explain, you know, the pandemic does not sufficiently explain what, you know, the whole two baseball phenomena, But then, and so for that reason, I kind of think that they just kind of floated it because it's plausible if you're not like paying super close attention. you know, to the data. You know, again, everyone's blaming random supply issues on the pandemic right now. It's like a headline every day is supply chain, you know, so. That is my,
can't,
you know,
cream
so,
cheese my bagel.
Yeah.
Supply chain.
You're right. Seriously. I just
literally, yes.
I'm not ready to have this conversation. Like this is hitting real close to home.
Cream cheese. It hurts.
So that's
why there's no cottage cheese at the stores here.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
Apparently.
So Dr. Wills' research directly contradicts the statement, you know, in some ways, and that, which leads me to think that it was just a plausible explanation if you're not paying attention, but it's impossible if you actually know anything.
not to mention the fact that you know, if the excuse is COVID for them using the two baseballs, well, yeah, that's fine. So why did you make two for 2021? Because if there had been no supply chain issue, you still would have had two baseballs, even right. If we had like all of the 2020 new balls and all the 2021 new balls. That's still less than a season's worth of baseballs.
It's so, yeah, because it's not like they ran out of baseballs and were like, oh shit, let me go up into the attic and find our old baseballs. Oh, here we are.
But that is what the league said.
Like they went out to a baseball store.
And they did use a lot of 2020s, like almost the entire first half. You know, so I don't think the supply chain, how would I put this? I think there may have actually been a supply chain problem, just not the one they're talking about. Because if you look at like, you know, when the baseballs were used, because like I've got two calendars, I've basically got like, here's when they were made. And I've also got, here's when they were used. And so for the ones that were used, the first half, like before the All-Star break, is almost all balls that were made for the 2020 season. I have some for 2021, but they don't show up until, you know, like that.
Well, of course, they had extra 2020 September balls because they only played
shortened season.
Well, and they had a lot of leftovers, but like, so this one, for instance, is September of 2020. I, up until like, you know, the All-Star break, this was like the latest I found. And I was convinced for a while, it's like, maybe they just didn't make them because of something like COVID. Maybe the factory was shut down. I was hearing totally different stuff. But then suddenly in July, I start seeing balls from after September. And they, as far as I can tell, they ship stuff from Costa Rica up to St. Louis in two big shipments. And so it looks like the second one must have just been delayed. I mean, like there were no, for instance, there were no opening day balls. Nothing was stamped 2021 opening day. And I know because I looked. And that may very well have been that they didn't know when they were going to get the rest of the baseballs. And so, yeah, they very likely did use up the 2020s. But even if they hadn't, they still would have had two baseballs. There just would have been more 2021s interspersed early on. So it's a lame excuse because it still doesn't fit production. It also, by the way, means like, close to half of the 2021s are still sitting in inventory. Oh, gee, I wonder what they're going to do with those.
Three baseballs in 2022. Just add another baseball
if
every
we're
year.
Not in,
or
on strike.
They could just do the same production calendar they did for 2020 and 2021, which is old ball, new ball, old ball. In fact, even like when the article came out, if they did the same calendar, they would have been all the way through first part of the old ball and a couple months into the new ball. So maybe they're scrambling at Rawlings to switch back. I don't know. Maybe they're just continuing the new ball. Maybe they're just going to do what they did the whole time because nobody's going to be able to tell until I start taking the baseballs apart, by which time it will be way too late.
Oh, boy. So this question is for both of you. So, Bradford, your piece was published about a week ago on November 30th, and 2 days later, MLB implemented a lockout. Goody. That represents the 9th work stoppage in MLB history. And that lockout is unfortunately ongoing and has widespread effects on the game, even if the league owners and the players come to an agreement prior to the start of the season. How do you guys think this information about the baseballs will or will not factor into labor negotiations this winter? And Bradford, I know you had mentioned it earlier on about the negotiations, so I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say about it.
Yeah. So I think there's like two levels to this. One is that what's been communicated to me is that the absolute first order concern from the union side, right? Which is probably true of like the, you know, the ownership in the commissioner's office as well, right? Is like explicit, unavoidable, just like pure black and white or black and red, you know, economic, you know, concerns, right? So like just making, you know, better, more equitable accounting of like how money flows to the league. And so it's everything from like service time issues and manipulation, which is why they're, you know, proposing these like hard free agency cutoffs or, and, you know, are, you know, hard service on cutoffs before you're able to enter free agency, age-based rather than, you know, than season-based, cause that's exploitable. All the, you know, just discussing reworking arbitration and, you know, and all sorts of things that help younger players, receive salaries that are commensurate with the production that they're giving to their teams, you know, or at least something closer to commensurate. That has been, you know, that has been, from my understanding, the absolute first order concern, you know. People are really upset about the baseball, but it's not like a formal negotiation point, you know, based on everything I've heard and discussed and players have spoken to, you know. However, it is not hard to look and see areas, you know, see reasons why that could change in your future. Let's think domestically, right? The NBA back in 2006. Their basketball manufacturer at times, Spalding, went from a organic basketball to a synthetic one, like as far as the materials. They had very little player input, the league or Spalding, you know, on the quality of these new balls. I think they just gave a few out during the All-Star break from the previous season, but earlier that year, I guess, in 2006. And then just ran in and just kind of, you know, shipped in these new balls, and that was it. Everyone hated it. If you were around or you were a basketball fan at the time or read the article, like which I cite this as an example, everyone hated it. People were furious. Mark Cuban, you know, from Shark Tank fame and also the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, he commissioned a study to try and understand how this new basketball, this new Spalding ball, was affecting things. That people were constantly complaining about the grip and the shot being off and slippery, just ugly basketball, turnovers, whatever. They eventually got so bad that that the NBPA, that, you know, that's the NBA's players union, they filed a grievance with the National Labor Review Board, the NLRB, about the way that this new ball switch was implemented. And before the next year's All-Star break, that, you know, those new basketballs were gone and they went back to the old, you know, Spalding. It left such a scar in the NBA. And the players that when the NBA switched their manufacturer from Spalding to Wilson this season, going into this season, players were immediately reacting to it. Like, I think KD like responded, KD being Kevin Durant, right, responded someone's like social media announcement, some reporter's social media announcement was like, well, hell nah. Like, you know, that was, and he wasn't even in the league in 2006. He was you know, I think so he was like in high school or college or something like that, you know. So the fact that even, you know, that they left such a scar back then that, you know, that players were already preemptively complaining about it, you know, kind of shows how big a deal it was. And then even this season with this new ball that has received a lot more input from the players this year because the NBA didn't want to repeat the same mistakes as they've made the switch, that, you know, players are still complaining about it because they feel like they're shot, you know, just like there's something slightly off about this new basketball that makes their, you know, that makes their shot, you know, at the very least an adjusted period, but, you know, but at worst, but, you know, a unavoidable difference in touch, you know, with the ball they've been using all their life, or then all the professional life anyway, you know, that's leading to their shots being off. And we're seeing that at least as recently as a few weeks ago, statistically, 3-point percentage in the NBA is way down. For the first time in years, because, like, you know, the same way, like, in Major League, in MLB, everyone is focusing on exit velocity and launch angle to optimize, like, you know, big innings and, you know, and scoring as much as possible in bunches. NBA is doing the same thing with their three-point revolution. Everyone's trying to be, you know, do what Steph Curry and the Warriors do, you know, and shoot, you know, shoot from the outside. So they become more and more efficient and pretty much everyone in the league for like years. And then this year it's a drop. That's really weird. And so, Paul George, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, all huge perennial all-stars, all of them going to Hall of Fame one day. Like they're all saying like, we have problems with this new ball. So that's happening right now, like literally right now in the NBA with way more transparency than MLB, you know, the MLB is given for with this two baseball situation. Then go over across the pond to, you know, to Japan, their top professional league, the NPB. About 10 years ago, they had a similar
2013.
Sort of,
so yeah.
2013. Yes. Thank you. So yeah. They had a similar controversy as well, where like, you know, where their manufacturer changed how the ball worked. It led to like a home run explosion in MPB. And the players were so upset with the lack of heads up about this process change of the ball that they like, you know, that the union, like, you know, basically we're at the commissioner's neck, you know, publicly and privately about this. And it led to the commissioner of NPB resigning in disgrace. So that happened in Japan, you know, like
imagine Rob resigning in disgrace.
Right. Yeah. Both these things happen in living memory. We're all alive, all alive for this, you know.
We can live to see the day.
It's not even like an only 90s kids remember this. Like, you know, like we're all, you know, for the millennials in the house, but like, yeah, that's these are recent sort of ball issues that created labor crises. So it would not surprise me if there can if more research can come out of an explicit economic tie. I think likely that would lead to like, you know, it would mean to some sort of information about intent to or actual distribution of different of like a different, you know, baseballs in different places based in different times or whatever, you know, like something beyond just, you know, pure 50-50 split for everybody. Like I think that could create problems that would lead, you know, some people to feel like they were screwed, and rightfully so. That's my opinion based on, you know, on what I've spoken to and just seeing, you know, precedent around the league, I mean, in other domestic leagues and around the world. So
I also think just like trust is so low between the players in the league right now that like, even if the players are not taking this to the table as like an issue, because there's no proof of the conspiracy theories, like you said, Bradford, that I think if like Pete Alonso's theory or someone else's theory was proven to be true, then that would become a huge labor problem. But even if they're not bringing it to the table as an explicit issue, I think that it just like exacerbates like existing tensions, like in a more intangible
absolutely,
way.
Absolutely, Allison. And it also opens up the potential for potential conspiracy like that. If you're able to do it, what if someone does it, you know, even if it's not happening right now, like hypothetically. So that's the you're really hit it, you know, the nail on the head, right? Tension was already bad, trust was already low, tension was high, trust was low, and it's only lower because of this two ball setup.
Yeah. And the other thing that I was thinking as you were talking about the NBA is that I feel like, and this is an unfortunate like side effect of just like how baseball is culturally, I feel like individual players have so much less power to like shift public opinion, because like someone like KD in basketball is like such a huge star, and like he's a way bigger star than like Mike Trout is. Mike Trout should be the biggest star in baseball, and his name should be as well known as someone like KD, but it's just not. And so I wonder if like the way baseball just is culturally, and that there's so like few transcendent superstars that are known like across the country and across the world, like if that has an impact on like, you know, how much they can like move the needle on things by speaking out. I mean, it's always,
I don't know, we just get Otani and Aaron Judge and we're probably fine, right?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Hey, anyone has a line?
I'm good with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to Otani. That'd be awesome.
That'd be cool. Shohei Ohtani.
So obviously, he's been on both sides of the ball. He's
I was going to say, yeah. He, more than anyone, would like.
Yeah, so would he know. Would definitely know.
Get that. Yeah. But also, I mean, it seems like, I mean, just kind of building on the trust thing, there's also an element of gaslighting about it. Mm. Of MLB, like, standing there and saying to these people who are, like, absolute, like, the ultimate experts in what a baseball feels like and does, and saying, like, no, it's totally normal.
You don't know what well, you're talking about.
But that's all they've ever, I mean, that, yeah, frankly, like, that's.
This is a baseball. What's
and the reasoning, Maggie, which was in the statement was, no, what are we talking about? We told you guys already. They we claimed that
yeah,
they told
I mean, the players, come on, really?
The PA about this. Again, maybe they have, maybe got lost in Tony Clark's, you know, email or spam or whatever. But like, I can't find a single player who, you know, including very like labor and union involved folks who can recall this. They were, you know, and this is before MLB statement came out, you know, and you know, my polling of this, like, hey, was your understanding one ball, two balls, you know? Same with front office workers.
Yeah, I was going to say that the front offices like never had this corrected.
And
Ken Rosenthal, you know, literally published a leak of a memo that was sent to GMs. And you'd think they would have at least corrected Ken Rosenthal's report, right?
Right, I mean, exactly. Every Ken headline Rosenthal. Was new
they
dead baseball,
put
right?
This out there.
There was no like some new dead baseballs. None of that was never like the upshot of like the reporting back then, right? It was like new dead baseball. And so last 6 months, all the like analysis and nerdy, you know, stuff and the commentary was on, you know, this new dead baseball is affecting everything, you know, or affecting this, affecting that, or not affecting this, or not affecting that. But you know, but there was no sort of like, you know, thought that there was two of them. And then they, you know, Major League Baseball also claimed that their scientific advisors were all, you know, were informed as well. But before Major League Baseball sent that statement to me, when I went out for comment, I reached out to Alan Nathan, who is a esteemed physicist in his own right. And was the chair of Major League Baseball's home run committee to study the whole juice ball era that we're still in, frankly, to try and understand, like, you know, why the ball was flying out of the park so much. And so, like, he's like the top dude of their, you know, team of like experts who are, you know, helping them think about what to do with the baseball. And when I asked him about this, and he's usually been also someone who's been out front with the press in giving, you know, including as recently as February this year with the article that Stephanie Apstein wrote in Meredith Streiber.
Yeah, he was the one who provided the level of detail about the tension and the winding and exactly how that was, you know, deadening the ball. And even, you know, actually, we even got graphs after the article came out that basically showed exactly like with numerical stuff, how the COR had been changed. So yeah,
so back in February, like Alan was like, you know, was serving as a de facto spokesman for the league, also like what was happening with the baseball. When I reached out to him in November, before I reached out to the league, just asking, hey, were you, you know, you familiar with 202 ball thing? And he's like, I'm going to leave any comment about the baseball to MLB or Rawlings. That's like almost verbatim what he said. So, you know, that is quite a change in tune from February to now. That doesn't sound like, to me, I mean, correct me wrong, guys, or Facebook, you know, listeners, that doesn't sound like someone who is intimately aware of the process.
Kept in the loop, shall
you know,
we
kept
say?
In loop, kept in the loop, you know, BCC'd on everything, you know. That sounds like someone, you know, who may be less informed, you know, may not have been especially informed to me, in my opinion. I think there's, well, it's a long way of saying that there are many more stories to write about this.
Yeah. And I'm sure that we will have one or both of you back on the show at some point again to discuss it when there is, because this is ongoing and it's a long winter of no baseball stuff.
Yeah. I will admit, it's come up in a couple different places about people with like the suspicious timing or something. It's like, well, it's turned out to be good timing, but no, I promise it wasn't being dropped specifically because it was like going to be this bombshell. On the other hand, it's kind of interesting that there's not a ton else in baseball to talk about. right now. And once the Hall of Fame votes go through and once we have a new manager for the Mets, I'm not really sure what's out there other than like a lot of speculations about, okay, well, maybe such and such will get signed as a free agent somewhere, but it's like, well, how do you know? No one's allowed to do that yet. So I don't know. So hopefully we'll keep hearing more about it because there's nothing else to talk about.
Makes the silence from non-independent outlets all the more deafening, is what I'll say. The more time that passes, the more deafening the silence is.
I mean, you know, we can keep watching videos of, you know, like World Series from the 80s or something. That's fine.
That's the only thing we've got.
I was gonna say, we can't do it on MLB.com because I think they took down all the videos.
Well,
are the videos down now too?
That's what I think I read.
I thought it was only highlights of current players.
Was it? Okay.
Well, so I know that
you can use your free time to send Meredith all of your baseballs and then she can do more research and then
we can get to the bottom of this research.
Yeah. I mean, postseason balls would be huge. Like in 2019, that was a very big deal and it's not like I can go out and buy them. It's gotta be something that showed up at the park. So, anybody, if you've got some, if you know somebody, you know how to get in touch with these lovely hosts. And Bradford is also not a bad person. You know, I'm sure they can get you info. You know, we will find a way. I even have some, in fact, go back to the SI article. If you want to see the level that I have been known to go to make sure that there are no problems with people getting me baseballs, there are ways, I promise.
Get your baseballs to Meredith.
Do it for science.
For science.
Yep. And we're bored.
Well, you know, I mean, I like to think that these baseballs having lived, actually this one's probably lived a very short life, but anyway, they are noble and brave and are willing to sacrifice their bodies to science in order to further the cause. And I applaud every one of these baseballs that I am going to very slowly and take apart in ways that are probably excruciatingly painful for baseballs, but they never complain.
Toy Story's not real, right?
I feel so bad. No, actually I don't, but anyway.
Thank you. Hashtag thank you for your service.
Something like that. Baseballs.
I'm gonna
there's a joke that came to mind that's not gonna be funny, so never mind. Anyway, next step.
But you know, I assure you all, by the way, Mets listeners, Mets fan listeners among us, I assure you all that we will talk about the managerial search and all the free agents that the Mets have signed in apparently a Steven Matz's agent-induced rage. We will cover all that next time.
That.
But in the meantime, we will end this show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Dr. Meredith Wills, what is your walk-off win?
Okay, I am going to try a screen share here. Let me see if I can make it happen. You've disabled it. Never mind.
Oh, no. I can try it. Not.
Fix it.
Awesome. Yeah.
I don't know.
This is much more fun.
Wait a minute.
Just this host has disabled it.
Advanced sharing options.
Yes.
All participants.
Yes.
Awesome. Let's try that. Okay, cool. This is my walk-off win, which we kind of discussed before. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
Yeah. So everybody probably saw this already, but So somebody got in touch with me on Sunday morning and said, So your picture was in the Times of London is basically this. Like, so the international press not only.
Well, I don't think it was the Times of London. I think it was like a national paper.
No, it is. The point is, it used to be just the Times of London, but now it is. Times of London. I looked this up. Sorry. It's the same paper. So it's easier for us Yanks to refer to it as the Times of London, because otherwise we confuse it with the New York Times or the LA Times. I had someone actually say, oh yeah, cool, you were in the LA Times. I'm like, we were? When? That wasn't the LA Times. But anyway, this was kind of a shock. But I don't know if I've ever had my picture in the paper at all, let alone my picture in the paper across the pond. And that picture is literally from a Brewer's Stitch and Pitch on top of everything else. And it was on the
Brewer's shows that big picture. Screen.
It's the perfect picture. You look so like skeptical. And like,
I know you look like you're like giving Rob Manfred the stink eye.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
What's funny is the context is so totally like if it, in the full picture, I've got like, you know, I'm holding knitting and, you know, it's my brother took like it never would have dawned on me. But yeah, it looks great. I mean, I'm so psyched. I'm like, if this is the image the world has to have of me, it's awesome. I love it. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, so this is my walk off win is that I'm apparently internationally famous now or something.
Amazing.
You go, woman.
Well, this is an international podcast we have.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if like somebody over, in so. This country did that too? Not yet. Eventually.
We'll see. Maybe.
I can give them a copy of the picture if they want it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Hit her up. So Brad for William Davis, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Yeah, I just got back from Universal Studios. So I think that's actually I had a very fun week because I mean, it was unfortunate a little bit, honestly, because the timing of the story. I did not want to be kind of working on this, you know, right before the trip. And even though, again, I expected it to be a big story, I wasn't exactly sure of what the reception would be. I figured it'd be like, you know, like sizable, but not like this. This is my fifth interview, not including my weekly baseball perspectives podcast that I've done about since Monday morning. And I also did, you know, a couple of live hits. I was on Cheddar News, you know, for my hotel in Universal Studios. I did talk radio. I'm just kind of all this air traffic control managing of like the story and everything. And just trying to, you know, generate as much interest as possible and you know, say yes to as much as I can, while also like, you know, I don't know, running in between the Mummy and the, you know, Men in Black rides. Like that was, it was fun. But you know, it was disappointing, but to bring back to the whole win part, I mean, like it was a really, really fun blast of a trip. Like the rides are so dope, man. I strongly recommend going to Universal Studios Orlando. You know, so long as you are able to travel and everything and obviously please get back.
That window may have closed. You did it right at the end, I think.
Right. No. Well, you know, the funny thing is that if, we planned it for August. As Fat Joe once said during a versus, the COVID was in there in Florida. So like we actually had to, scrap that. I was like, you know, I'm not going to Florida right now. I don't think it's wise for anybody to go into the essentially the eye of the storm at that point. So we pushed it back to late November, thinking, oh, it's probably nothing happening, right? You know, and you know, when do I know that the story would come out in late November, you know? And so because of that, like, you know, that it just, you know, it was what it was, but like it is what it is, but like, yeah, we had a, you know, a blast. I mean, there's a Simpsons themed part of Universal Studios, and I love the Simpsons, where like they have a replica, but also working Krusty Burger and Moe's Tavern. So like, you can get your Krusty Burger. They have a Duff Brew, like a special, you know, unique Duff Brew that they have on tap at the at the bar. They have a replica phone, like a prank, the phone that Mo picks up that Bart Simpson pranks him with. It's an IP Freely, you know. I'm looking for IP Freely, you know, like those great puns from that show. It was a blast.
I was gonna make a joke that you had one a butterbeer in one hand and a podcast mic in the other, but maybe it's a Duff Brew in one hand and a butterbeer in the other hand, and if you had a third hand and
the podcast and mic on the table. I wasn't hit up Harry Potter worlds. There's two of them, actually, two different Harry Potter areas. So if you like are a Harry Potter fan, you should absolutely go like, because it's
actually I'm remarkable. Afraid, seeing as I love the books and hate the movies.
I'm not even a Harry Potter person at all, but like it was phenomenal. Like they recreated Diagon Alley, which I don't really know what that means, but like we're basically like, you know, on the outside is something that looks like just kind of like a couple of London townhouses, but you walk into this little corridor and you see this magical, mystical world, you know, of commerce.
You gotta stay on brand. Enjoy, is there a Hogwarts Express? You know?
Yes.
There's actually a train that takes you between there are like three Universal Studio parks, but there's like, you know, the flagship one, and then there's Islands of Adventure, which is more like roller coastery.
Oh, it's the Hogwarts Express, the train between them?
Yeah. So there's awesome. A train that you could take, you know, like actual transit, you know, that takes you between the two parks, so long as you have, you know, working ticket for it, that takes you to the other Harry Potter area, which is I think Hogsmeade. You know,
yeah, Hogsmeade, and it's immersive too. They like show you videos on the like the windows of the train.
It looks like Universal Studio stuff. It's very like virtual and interactive and stuff like that, and simulates the feeling of
I can put up with it.
Movement and drama and all that. And so, you know, just kind of recreating the joy of like a blockbuster movie experience in your ride.
Should we explain to him what Diagon Alley is derived from, or should we let him as a writer figure it out for himself?
Diagonal? I don't know.
Thank you. Diagonally. Nocturnally is nocturnally. She does that all over the place.
Yep.
I always listen to an audiobook, but I never got it.
More difficult than what? It actually is.
What?
Okay, I've drank more butterbeers than read Harry Potter books. So, like I'm like 3-1 right now.
Better than the movies.
Yeah. And I've watched two movies. The first one and the last one.
I was going to say, I think the first two movies stay pretty faithful to the books. That's my opinion. And then it goes downhill from there.
Well, yeah.
That's like the third one, because it was the only one that felt like its own movie. Like it had like a style. The third one.
Yeah, see, I like the third one's my favorite book in the series. So, and I just had a vision of it, and going along with the first two movies, and it was completely different. And I just did not react well to it at all.
I was happy to have a vision involved in the movie at all.
I have seen them for Order of the Phoenix. That's like by far the hardest read. It's also by far the longest book.
Yes.
And a friend
I saw it referred to as 800 pages of Harry felt angry.
Yes.
Basically, that's a good way to think of it.
Angst. Angst.
Yeah, it's totally angst. But the so a friend of mine was like, yeah, how she liked that the best because they like, you know, cut everything else out and just kept this. And that was why it was her favorite movie. I'm like, that's exactly why it was my least favorite.
It's like, has robust Harry Potter takes. I have robust Harry Potter takes, because I have for full disclosure, folks watching who don't know this about me, I have a Harry Potter tattoo. Like that is how
you are. For books, I will happily go head to head to you on trivia, Allison.
Oh,
dead serious.
Tune in next week.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah, tune in next week.
How many staircases?
Oh, how many staircases in Hogwarts? Oh, I don't remember. I'm not actually good at 122. I was going to say 242. I was going to say 242 because I remembered 42, but I couldn't remember how many hundred. But I'm actually not that good at Harry Potter trivia, even though I've read the books like a million times. It's just like, I don't know why my brain doesn't retain the facts. It just doesn't. Right. I mean, sometimes some facts I retain, but okay. No, I when I first went to Harry Potter World, Meredith, I mean, okay, I like the movies, full disclosure. I mean, I have my quibbles. Don't get me wrong. I have my quibbles. But
my problem is I like the books enough where it's hard to watch the movies.
I know,
like,
it is hard. It's very hard. But when I went to Harry Potter World for the first time, I cried. Like, I was just so overwhelmed by it. I was like, because it's like when you grow up with something the way that I did with Harry Potter, and when it means that much to you and you just like see it come to life before your eyes.
I'm sure.
Like I bawled like a child. I was not expecting it. Like I walked into Diagon Alley and I was just like, this is just like how it is. I feel like a wizard.
Yeah. Like, see, I'm actually in real life. If you actually think of the books, I'm actually a few years older than Harry Potter in real life. So I only read them. Like I was already grown up when they came out.
Right.
So my perspective was very different.
I was the same age Harry was, like, basically.
Oh, there we go. That's got to be even more meaningful. Is your birthday July 31st?
No, it's not. It's October 29th. But like, so basically it's like a couple months.
No, there's definitely like a real like millennial connection to Harry Potter.
No question.
That just kind of like went over me, but like, you know, but respect to everyone. I
don't think I've read a word in their lives except those books. And they've read all of them.
For sure.
I missed a lot of the hype. I was just sort of like in my own little world at the time. And I'm like the only one in the world who is very tepid. I'm like, they're fine. The movies are mostly fine.
It's good.
And like, and nobody knows what to do with that. Everyone's like, oh, I hate Harry Potter, like my whole life. And I'm like,
people have very visceral love or hate. It's very polarizing. And we won't talk about, we're not getting into J.K. Rowling on this podcast.
No,
which we're not going to talk about that.
I was going to say,
this is a walk-off wins.
This is walk-off wins. Yeah.
We'll take to the host.
Cleanse it. All right, Maggie, what is your walk-off win?
Okay, my walk-off win. I dropped Kelly. We did something on Sunday that I've wanted to pull off for a couple of years and just for various reasons couldn't. And that is, I have my own little visual. I took the kids on the Polar Express.
Oh, very cool.
We drove all the way over to the ass end of New Jersey.
You didn't tell me you were here?
We weren't there. We went. We didn't go to one near you. We were in Phillipsburg, right near the Delaware River. And it was lovely. And that's another thing that I'm actually kind of tepid on is I sort of feel like the book is kind of and I sort of feel like the movie is kind of and nobody knows even movie, that opinion
the, either. I haven't been able to watch the movie actually, but
the animation style, I can't get past it. It's like very,
and it's also
very
like
unsettling.
It's a very different vibe from the book, which is all like.
Which part of the reason it's almost like I chose not to really watch the movie because the book is his own thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like, but the you book know, is very Christmassy. The feeling of being there and like, you know, we went at night. I was like low in bedtime, out the window, like, forget it. You know, we got to have that Christmas magic. The kids wore their PJs and they got onto the train car and like, you know, they bring around the hot chocolate.
Okay, I was going to say they have to do the hot chocolate.
And I spent way too much money at the gift shop. And then Santa comes around and he gets everybody's, gets, you know, all their Christmas wishes. And like, this is where I won't go too much into it because it is walk-off wins, but Eleanor dropped on me a Santa like bomb request that I did not see coming. And it's probably the last year she's going to believe in Santa. So.
Oh,
but it's fine. It's fine. I'll get her a castle. It's fine. I mean, Santa will get her a castle. And it was just great. You know, they played some music and it was just a lovely, lovely day or evening and everything. Yeah. It was a really good, trip. So Delaware River Railroad is the company that does it. A few years ago, we also rode, they do like a Thomas train over usually during the summer. And that's really awesome. They have like a dinosaur train, which I've never ridden before, but sounds boss. So, it was great. So, yeah, Polar Express.
I shouted at Maggie like she came to the one by me because I have a railway museum very close to my house, so like in walking
distance. I'm on their
distance.
Mailing list, so I do know that they do one too. Oh,
man, so I was like, no, you came all the way here and didn't tell me.
We would never have done that.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, Kellyanne.
So that's why like, Kellyanne also likes trains and also loves books and is a children's librarian. So that's why I was like,
Kellyanne's going to let her walk-off win.
Okay. So I have a really kind of simple walk-off win. I'm in graduate school right now for library science to become a full-time children's librarian. Although, yeah, no, I'll save that one for off podcast. So I have 12 days left. I'm surviving my first semester. It's almost over. And I won't lie, I'm like grad school burned out right now, but I'm like so close to done. I can taste it and I'm so excited.
Yay. Congratulations on completing your first semester. That's big, honestly. Yes. Like wonderful. Just getting through the first semester is huge. Trust me.
And I met, so to speak, one of my professors for the first time today. And she is just an angel from heaven. I love her so much. And she's running for president of the American Library Association. So if any of our watchers are ALA members, vote for Emily when the time comes. I know we have at least one.
Nice. Campaign podcast.
Yes, campaign podcast for ALA president.
for ALA president. So my walk-off win is also pretty simple this week. It's like, it's kind of the story of like making like a bad situation into a good one, because our planned, mine and Michael's planned Thanksgiving went out the window due to a COVID exposure, which is just like, that really sucked. And it's like, this is what the world is now. And it was really crappy and made me feel bad, because it was like me who was exposed. And I was like, I ruined Thanksgiving. But we ended up like doing like, he stayed here. And because his family's Thanksgiving was nearby, because he has relatives in Northern Virginia, we're in DC. And so his mom and his sister and brother-in-law came and brought him the like leftover food from the big gathering. And they like hung out and had pie together and spent the weekend. And I ended up going to New Jersey to hang out with my family instead, just as a smaller group. And we were sitting at the Thanksgiving table, and my mom turned to me and she said, this is the first time we've had Thanksgiving, just the four of us, like my brother, me, and my parents. She was like, we've always had more people or fewer people, but we've never just had us. And I was like, yeah, it's really nice. And it was just nice. And like, you know, if it was, it was crappy at first, because I felt really bad about like ruining our Thanksgiving plans, because I unknowingly got exposed to COVID. Someone I knew I was hanging out with just like tested positive, and like I got an email like, hey, I may want to get a test. And I was like, oh no. But it ended up working out in the end, and I got to spend time with my family that I did not expect to. So that was really nice. And I just had an enjoyable Thanksgiving. So that's my walk-off win. And I hope all of our listeners had an enjoyable Thanksgiving as well. I know that this can be holidays can be a really tough time for people. So just know that, you know, you have online family in us, and we are here. And if you need anything,
to bring you cheer,
Just hit us up. Honestly, if you just want to chat about baseball and distract yourself from this time of year, because it can suck, just DM me.
We're here.
DMs are open. Apato DMs are open. My personal DMs are not, but Apato DMs are.
Mine are for the moment, or just come visit me on the Amazon Avenue comments too. Yep. I hang out there.
And you can, even though there's a lockout, you can still read AmazonAvenue.com. It's not MLB.com. We are not affiliated media. So you can read all of our articles on AmazonAvenue.com.
Do you have pictures of players and everything?
Oh, yeah. We've got pictures of current players.
It's not just the silhouettes.
Shucks.
No, wow. Anonymous guy with hat.
Actually, that's not even on their app anymore. I mean, that's what blew my mind. It's like, okay, great. You just pulled everything because people were making fun of you. Really?
Yep. So you can find us at AmazonAvenue.com, and you can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Bradford, where can people find you on the internet and find your work?
Yeah. You know, like I said, my main writing gig is at Insider. That's my, you know, that's pay the bills and pay rent and stuff. I, you know, you'll find my pieces at Insider.com. You'll research my name. Bradford William Davis is my byline. I've done other baseball things there too. I've been fortunately allowed me to pursue sports stories so far. And so like the last one was, you know, actually about, Devin Williams, the last year's rookie of the year, 2020 rookie of the year. And, wonderful and courageous moment that, a almost met likely ruined by, or nearly ruined by attempted to ruin by defacing, his, a BLM inscription he wrote on the mound. Shortly after Jacob Blake was nearly killed by Kenosha police. So, they let me do deep dives like that, you know, but I expect to be writing about things that are actually, I will be writing, writing about things that have nothing to do with sports as well, but I hope to always be able to, you know, keep at least one foot in this world. I'm also on, I podcast weekly on Baseball Prospectus. So you can find me in the 5 and 9 podcast with Craig Goldstein. I post a lot. I post too much. Twitter.com/BWD because that's my initials, and I couldn't get I wanted to get like the AOC, like one, you know, just three letters thing, but like apparently it's a 4-character minimum thing. So that's why I did.
And you didn't want to be BWD bunch of numbers, because Lord knows. Then your opinions would suddenly go south. All your takes would suddenly become bad.
yeah, exactly. I'd have to get the Oakleys and a picture sunglasses. Of a dog, a golden retriever, and, you know, and you know, while driving a car, Like, I just have to do that in order to be on brand. So, so anyway, that's me. So yeah, so that's where you'd find me. I'm also, I'm on IG. I haven't posted much of there, but like, you know, that's me.
Meredith, where can people find your work and you on the internet?
Wow. Well, I was going to say probably just keep up with me on Twitter right now, because it's not so much me writing stuff as people like Bradford writing about my stuff. And so, yeah, it's mostly, I mean, I've got accounts everywhere, or not everywhere, but other places, but I'm basically just on Twitter, and that's Baseball Astrophysics, which is BBL _ and then Astrophysics without the I, because Bradford was talking about minimum number of characters. Back when I did that handle, that was a maximum number of characters, hence missing a letter, but it also makes it distinct. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we will link to it.
Yes. That's actually what I usually suggest. Just like find me.
We will be linking the insider piece that we spent basically this whole show discussing, as well as Bradford and Meredith's social handles, so you guys can check them out. We are on Twitter.
Baseballs. Send baseballs.
Send baseballs to Meredith. Send baseballs to Meredith. I don't even know.
Send scoops to me.
And send scoops to Bradford. I'm pointing at their squares on my Zoom, but I don't know if that's their squares on Facebook. Sorry.
Or you can, if you try to send scoops to me, I will direct you to Bradford. If you try to send Bradford baseballs, he'll send them to me.
Yeah. So if you mix it up, it's okay.
It's all good.
We'll get it to the right place. It's okay. You can follow us at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us individually on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
And you, Kellyanne?
At LRBELLAREBEE.
Thanks to all of you that joined us on Facebook Live. Thank you, Bradford and Meredith, for coming on today. We really appreciate it. The original intro and outro music to the podcast, if you're listening to this on audio the next day, is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. We will discuss the Mets next week or 2 weeks from now. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Thank you all for joining us.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast from New York Magazine. Our first season is about a secretive underground that's about to go mainstream. Psychedelic therapy. Silicon Valley loves it, big name universities and scientists love it, but almost no one is looking that closely at what's really about to go down.
Lily, I know you left the psychedelic world, and I would love for you to talk about the moment where it went from being something safe to something treacherous and bad.
Oh boy, have you buckled your seatbelt? The was dark.
Cover Story, Season 1, Power Trip. Because it's not the drugs that are the problem, it's the people high on power. Check out Cover Story on Spotify or wherever you listen.